Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I'm your host, pharmacist Eric Christensen. And today I'm going to be covering buspirone, which the brand name of this medication is Buspar. Its generic kind of classification is an anti-anxiety type medication. And I would say in clinical practice, that's probably the most common reason you're going to see this medication utilized. On occasion, I rarely have seen it used for depression as far as augmentation and using it with other antidepressant agents in patients who are struggling to get those symptoms under control. But I would say that's pretty rare there in general. So with buspirone, the mechanism of action is really not totally well understood as far as its role in managing and helping anxiety symptoms. Now, there is some theories, some suggested mechanism of actions that we might think that this medication works through. So when you think of a medication that might work for depression, might work for anxiety, we probably think of serotonergic activity. So that's one of the main mechanisms that our educated guess or best guess is that it is a partial agonist at 5-HT1 receptors, potentially 5-HT2 as well. So having that agonist stimulating type activity, you might hypothesize that's the reason why we may see some anti-anxiety, antidepressant type benefit with this medication. Now, there is one other suggested mechanism that it does have some mild dopamine blocking activity. So I'll talk about that a little bit as far as adverse effect profile and kind of a rare situation that you may come up against. With dosing, I think one of the bigger downsides with buspirone is that it's got a very short half-life. And so this medication is dosed generally 2 to 3 times per day. So in patients where you've got difficulty with adherence, maybe a very busy schedule, that type of thing, asking a patient to take a medication 2 or even 3 times a day can be a little bit more challenging. So that's definitely more of a disadvantage with this type of medication. One other disadvantage is kind of similar to, let's say, the SSRIs. These buspirone takes a while to work. So you're not generally going to get that instant relief of anxiety. You know, it's going to take generally a few weeks to really start to show some benefit in most cases there. So that can definitely be a downside. Advantages of buspirone compared to, you know, other anti-anxiety medications like benzodiazepines, for example. So tolerability, buspirone is generally very well tolerated, and particularly in our elderly population, we don't really run the risk of many active metabolites or those type of issues. So that can be really a beneficial thing when we compare buspirone maybe to benzodiazepines, for example, which we should know that, you know, benzodiazepines have a ton of nasty side effects in geriatric patients, from, you know, fall risk to sedation to confusion and so on and so forth there. Another advantage, again, kind of using that comparison of benzodiazepines, is that buspirone is not a controlled substance. So, you know, risk of addiction, dependence, really isn't there quite like it is for the benzos. So just some good comparisons, I think, to remember with buspirone there, and, you know, why it might be advantageous to use that this medication, or why it, you know, might not work in certain situations as well. Adverse effect profile, again, usually pretty well tolerated, at least in my experience from what I've seen Keep an eye out for any medication that kind of works in the brain and works on those receptors. Looking out for any CNS changes, you know, whether it's dizziness, sedation, confusion, those type of things. Maybe some mild GI adverse effects, but, you know, it's nothing major, you know, not, you know, if you compare it to, you know, metformin and other drugs that have, you know, well-known ability to cause GI upset, it's definitely nowhere near that type of frequency. Now, a couple of things that I did want to mention that kind of tie into the purported mechanism of action. So, serotonin agonist activity, there is potential, you'll see precautions, drug interactions, things of that nature for serotonin syndrome. So, your SSRIs, your TCAs, and so on and so forth, that could be a cumulative type effect. Again, this is clinical reasoning, looking at the patient, are we using high doses, you know, have they had a history of serotonin syndrome or something in the past, assessing that patient clinically and other medications that they're on can really help us determine, okay, is this likely going to be a significant issue or something we need to monitor closely, or is it not going to be that big a deal? The other one, there have been cases of pseudo-Parkinson's type symptoms, akathisia, those type of symptoms, movements, disorders. So keep that in mind if you maybe happen to have a patient on, you know, Sinemet for Parkinson's, for example, or if you're on other dopamine-blocking agents, you know, antipsychotics, things of that nature, you could potentially get a little bit of an additive effect. And again, it's kind of got this potentially weak dopamine blockade, and that may lead to an increased incidence of those movement disorders. Again, I haven't seen this in clinical practice personally, but there is some literature out there, case reports and things of that, that may indicate that this is at least possible. So, something to think about. Again, something that's not very common at all. From a kinetics perspective, the short half-life I mentioned, we need frequent dosing with this medication, unfortunately. There is a very high first-pass metabolism with buspirone as well. So I think that's just an important thing to note there. So let's take a quick break here from our sponsor, and then we'll get into drug interactions after the break. If you're a pharmacist in the market for board certification study material, whether it be NAPLEX, BCPS, ambulatory care, geriatrics, or medication therapy management certification, definitely go check out meded101.com/store, STORE. In addition, we've got other professional resources as well. So if you're a nurse, physician, student in any field that requires medication education, pharmacology, things of that nature, we do have a couple of books on Audible, which you can actually get your first one for free if you've never tried Audible. So definitely a cool little perk there. You can get 6 to 8 hours of case studies and drug interactions and good clinical discussion within one of those books. Again, you find that link along with all the other resources we have at meded101.com/store, STORE. Now, finishing up on drug interactions, buspirone, I would say there is definitely potential for a significant number of drug interactions. The clinical relevance and how significant that is maybe a little bit up for debate. So, buspirone is broken down by CYP3A4. Okay, so that's ultimately going to lead to a lot of potential drugs that could impact that 3A4 enzyme and raise or lower concentrations of buspirone, respectively. So, if you've got a CYP3A4 inhibitor, just keep an eye out. Look out for signs and symptoms of adverse effects, toxicity from buspirone. So your classic 3A4 inhibitors, grapefruit juice, some of the calcium channel blockers, some of the macrolide antibiotics like clarithromycin, azole antifungals. So those are just some good examples of drugs that can inhibit CYP3A4 and could raise concentrations of buspirone. Now, if you've got an inducer on board, carbamazepine, a St. John's wort, things of that nature, that could potentially reduce or lower concentrations of buspirone. So in that setting, you might see a patient that's had their anxiety very well controlled on buspirone. Maybe we start one of these inducers, and now all of a sudden they're not controlled anymore because the concentrations have been lowered there by this type of drug interaction. So just think about some of those medications and remember that 3A4 is a player with buspirone and that we're going to probably in most situations clinically monitor that patient. And then of course the other drug interaction I really wanted to point out was the serotonergic activity where this drug does potentially have some serotonin agonist activity. So any drug that's going to raise serotonin, your tramadols, your SSRIs, SNRIs, we do have that theoretical risk, however low that may be, depending upon that patient clinical situation. So that's going to wrap it up for today. Thanks for listening. If you enjoy the podcast, you'll definitely enjoy the free resource from reallifepharmacology.com. It's a 31-page PDF of the top 200 drugs, and I pick out the most important pearls that you need to know. So a really ideal resource for somebody going through pharmacology classes, for example, and that's ultimately free. Great resource for teachers and if you've got students with you and that type of thing, too, just to help teach and educate more about the really important stuff when it comes to medications there. If you enjoy the show, leave us a rating, review on iTunes. And I forgot to mention that PDF, absolutely free to you for subscribing to the blog and getting updates when we've got new podcasts or new things coming out. So go check that out at reallifepharmacology.com. Support our sponsor, MedEd101.com/store. And leave us a rating review if you love the show, you enjoy listening, and you've learned a few pearls here and there. So take care. Thanks for listening, and have a great rest of your day.